What's up, everyone, and welcome to Metalcore Nerds. I am your host, Sean Mott, and today we're taking a little break from the Book of Boba Fett after show. Chris is on vacation, a little mini vacation, celebrating his birthday in New York City. But don't worry, he'll be back next week, and we'll be covering episodes 4 and 5 of the Book of Boba Fett together. But this week, it's a very special episode of the podcast. I'm honored to be a part of the Destroy the Seven podcast event with 6 other amazing podcasts. Hops Geek News kicked this off last week with Hunter Zolomon, aka Zoom, and the Reverse Flash. Very awesome episode. Please go check that out. Tons of Cosmic Treadmills, ton of awesome knowledge on the character. Really, really cool character. I was only really familiar from the Flash TV show, which they barely scratched the surface on what he's capable of. 100% of that. Today, I am covering Black Manta. But before we get to the Black Manta talk, I'm also going to talk about my top 10 movies of 2021. I know it's a little late, but there were some movies I was hoping I could see from last year before doing this. And I'm riding solo this week, so I figured it was the perfect time to knock that out as well. But if you are new to the podcast, because you are following the Destroy the Seven podcast, which also I want to plug, next week is For Nerds by Nerds, an amazing podcast. Josh has one of the best voices in podcasts. That's just a fact. And then after that, we still have Paper Riot Entertainment, Geek Peek, We Get Dubbed, and The Twisted Cape, which shout out to The Twisted Cape for this awesome intro music that I mixed up with mine for this event. Very, very awesome. There's much more villainy to come after this episode and after you check out Hops Geek News episode. But if you are new, welcome. Metalcore Nerds is a podcast that combines the heavy music world with pop culture. I love metalcore and pop culture. And if you are coming back, you guys know the drill. You can find us everywhere at Metalcore Nerds. If you have not subscribed or followed or anything on any social media platforms or podcasting platforms, please do that. It helps. It's very easy. And if you start leaving reviews on Apple Podcasts, I'm going to be starting to read those out loud on air. So please do that. My goal is to get to 200 in the next few months. I'm pretty far away from that. I'm at around 40. So any help you can do with that is amazing. And go to metalcorenerds.com where you can find all the links, all the places where you can find us on podcasts right there. And you can check out our merch options. A few t-shirts. I just dropped a new gold variant of the Metalcore Mephisto shirt. Instead of yellow, it's metallic gold. And there's only a handful of them. So if you want one of those, definitely pick them up. Speaking of metalcore, big, big loss this week in the metalcore world. Every Time I Die announced they're calling it quits after being a band for 23 years. Now, I've been lucky enough. I live in upstate New York. They're from Buffalo, New York. I've been able to see them so many times, even in different states and different cities. But living in Syracuse for almost a decade, I got to see them at least once a year at the minimum. And I know there's a lot of like drama to do it with. Coming from a person who's been in a band that's broken up, there usually is some sort of drama. You're basically in a relationship with, you know, 3 to 4 other dudes. And it's hard. It's hard being in a band, especially a band that tours as much as they did and put out so many amazing albums that they did. It's crazy that they were a band that long. It's actually insane, but easily one of the most influential bands in metalcore ever, period. And probably the most consistent band in heavy music ever. They've never put out a bad record, in my opinion. And this is a big blow to the heavy music scene. But we'll have all their albums to listen to and all the memories of us seeing them at shows to remember them by. But rest in power to Every Time I Die, one of my favorite bands ever. On the plus side of metalcore, there's some new music out that came out in the recent weeks. Great American Ghost just dropped a new EP. It's awesome. It's only 4 songs. Super fast to listen to, but it's awesome. Easily their best stuff they've put out. Ethan's been on the podcast a number of times, so you're probably familiar with him if you listen to this podcast. Born Anew just dropped a new single called Rat in the Room. It's very awesome. And Distinguisher also dropped a new single. Both are coming out with full new releases this year, I believe, as well. As far as what I've been watching this week, really only, you know, Book of Boba Fett I watched this week, of course. The new Peacemaker episode was unbelievable. This show keeps surprising me, which I don't know how it can, but it does. John Cena is incredible. James Gunn is a fucking genius. And I know he's already announced that he's going to be doing another DC series after he's done with the Guardians stuff. And I can't wait to see what that is. It doesn't matter. Anything this dude does, I'm all aboard. Sign me up. Let's go. And then, as I've been talking about, Austin bugged me to watch Leftovers, and I'm now on the final season. There's only three seasons, so it's not a lot. But I'm on season three, and this show is crazy. It's not like everything is like mind-blowing revelations every episode, but it's more of what the fuck is going on every episode. And I kind of love that allure to it. So Damon Lindelof is the creator, and he did the Watchmen series, and he also wrote, I believe, on Lost as well. Lost had like a crazy team. It was like JJ, Brian K. Vaughan, Damon Lindelof, some of the best creators in pop culture. I know JJ is kind of divisive, but he's done some good stuff. So it is what it is. But if you've never watched Leftovers, this is all I'm going to say. This is how I've been pitching it to people. The opening scene from Endgame with Hawkeye losing his parents, or losing his family, not his parents, sorry. The whole show's like that, pretty much. It's really bleak, and it's really just struggling about with happiness and identity and purpose. And it's a beautiful, beautiful show. And so crazy. It's just like the things that happen and how things kind of connect together. It's very wild. I highly, highly recommend you watch that. So now I want to get into the top 10 movies of 2021. My top 10 movies of 2021. So there's a few movies I haven't seen. Just because they were in limited theater time and stuff didn't work out with being able to see it. I haven't seen the new Halloween Kills. I haven't even seen the latest Halloween like reboot. I haven't seen that either. Sam and I were supposed to see it with this other couple, and we've just never seen them. So that's why we haven't watched them. And I didn't see Green Knight, which I really wanted to see, and I've heard kind of mixed things about it, but mostly good. I did not see The Last Duel yet, but I know it's on HBO Max, so I'll probably be watching that soon. I don't really know if that one will crack the top 10, but it could surprise me. Who knows? And I have not seen Nightmare Alley. I'm sure there is a few that I haven't seen. Like, I haven't seen House of Gucci, but I don't think that would have touched my top 10 from what I've heard about it. And the scenes I've seen of Jared Leto in it, I don't see that being my top 10. Maybe my most disappointed of top 10, maybe. But I still haven't seen that either. So I'm sure I will get around to these ones eventually. But it's my top 10 from what I've seen. So if there's ones you're like, oh man, I think that would have been up there. Well, that's why. I probably didn't see it. So I want to do some honorable mentions for the year, because honestly, a ton of amazing movies came out last year. There was no short of content last year at all. So honorable mentions, Zack Snyder's Justice League. Now, how this movie even happened is wild. A lot of people said, you know, it doesn't exist. The Snyder Cut doesn't exist. And, well, it did. I know people are like, oh, well, he had to finish it. It's like they filmed like one scene. I think it was some of the Nightmare Vision scenes, and that was it. And they obviously had to redo all the visual effects. And I can't believe the Joss Whedon version even came out, because it's a travesty compared to Zack Snyder's vision for this movie was. And I thought they really rushed to Justice League, which, in hindsight, they still kind of did, but if we would have gotten Zack Snyder's version, it would have felt a lot less rushed. It set up everyone's future movies, like Aquaman, and it would set up The Flash way better than the one we got did. And it's just a bummer with all the Joss Whedon stuff that came out this week, and it's just like, that dude sucks. He just straight up sucks. I like a lot of stuff he's done. I grew up on Buffy. I like Avengers and Age of Ultron. It's just, I don't know. He took that movie and ripped everything that was, not everything, but a lot of what was good about it, and just threw it away, which I don't really understand why. But next honorable mention, Ghostbusters Afterlife. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm the hugest Ghostbusters fan in the world. I watched them when I was a kid and I liked them. I actually watched the first one. I went with my mom on Black Friday, and we watched the first one in the morning before we drove up and saw the new one. And man, it was a beautiful movie. Super funny. I mean, Paul Rudd, who goes wrong with Paul Rudd? There's even an Ant-Man Easter egg in it. It's great. And it's really funny and really heartwarming. And I didn't think we would have that. And I'm definitely a sucker for any movies that can take an old property or shows or anything like that, that can take an old property and add to it while also continuing it in a very good way. Cobra Kai, Creed with the Rocky stuff, even the new Scream movie that just came out. stuff like that is done very well. And there's another movie that didn't do very well that I'm about to bring up
too. But
stuff like that is, I love that stuff. Because, yes, it's this nostalgia thing that everyone's, you know, either loves or hates. I'm okay with it as long as it's done well and helps with the story and isn't just there to further. It's not just there to be there. It's there to help further the story in a really interesting way. And I do think this movie did that very, very well. Next movie is A Quiet Place Part 2. I loved the first one. This movie felt very Last of Us to me, which I love those games. So I dug this a lot. It was in my top 10 for a lot of the year. So it just got edged out by the end. Again, there was a lot of great movies this year. Another one that was really surprising to me, Netflix put out the Fear Street trilogy. And these movies were sick. It's like a blend of all the kind of horror that I like. Some of it felt very Scream. Some of it felt very Friday the 13th. And it was just like a cool, modern, new kind of horror series that I hope they kind of continue with. I would love if we got another trilogy of it. It was a really fun watching through those. Some brutal-ass kills. Some wild kills. So if you're into that kind of horror, definitely check it out. If you haven't, it's on Netflix, and I think almost everyone has Netflix at this point. The last two of my honorable mention are both horror movies as well, Candyman and Last Night in Soho. Both awesome movies. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, which I'm going to talk about later with Black Manta, was in Candyman, and that dude is incredible. That movie was really cool. Last Night in Soho was really cool. Edgar Wright, dude is amazing, doesn't really miss. And this movie was a cool kind of psychological thriller that you kind of, everything gets pieced together at the end. And I'm a fan of movies like that. So those are my honorable mentions. Zack Snyder's Justice League, Ghostbusters Afterlife, A Quiet Place Part 2, The Fear Street Trilogy, Candyman, and Last Night in Soho. So now, one more thing before we get into the top 10. So the biggest letdowns of the year, and I don't want to say worst movies because I don't like to judge movies and say that they're bad really, because a lot of work go into these things. And I don't think a lot of us really understand how crazy it is to get things like this made or even think of things. So it's kind of just things where it felt really disjointed to me and it didn't live up to my expectations of it, which some people like these movies. So it's not really saying they're bad. It's just, to me, I was like, it didn't really
hit the mark for me. So
I have three. Venom, Let There Be Carnage. I'm a big Venom and Carnage fan, and they just did my boy Carnage dirty. And it was kind of just the Venom show and everything else was there, which I love Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock and Venom. I really, really love that relationship that have built out with these two movies. But that's been the highlight in both of these movies. The stories for both weren't really there for me. And the villains were very lackluster. And having Carnage be a lackluster villain is a crime to me. A crime. So we'll see where that whole Sonyverse goes. I'm interested to see Morbius. It looks pretty cool, but the Venom trailers looked really cool too. So who knows what we're going to get with that one. Next one, Vacation Friends. John Cena, it was a Hulu movie. And I know some people were like, oh man, the movie's really funny. And I just felt like it was trying to be funny the whole time and just wasn't funny. I think John Cena's hilarious. In Blockers or in Suicide Squad or Peacemaker, he is downright hilarious. It's just the jokes in this movie just didn't hit for me. It was just kind of really weird. And it seemed like they tried to go really weird and really kind of like edgy humor, I guess, or raunchy humor. And I'm a fan of that kind of stuff. Like, look at Peacemaker and the Suicide Squad. But it just felt really forced, and I just wasn't into it.
Last one, Matrix Resurrections.
Now, it's weird. When I watched this movie in theaters, I kind of enjoyed it. But I knew there were so many parts of it that felt really out of place, and the movie as a whole didn't really work. But some of the ideas and concepts they introduced were really fucking cool. The opening sequence was awesome. It made you feel like you're right back in the Matrix. Some of the why of Trinity and Neo were still there, and we see what happened in the real world after the conclusion of the third movie, and that was really cool to see. But the whole overall coming together just felt weird. There's real weird meta humor, which I love Scream. They do meta right in a good way, and it doesn't feel out of place. And anytime they went in this weird meta humor in the Matrix for one, there shouldn't be humor in the Matrix. It's so weird. But it felt like a different movie at points. Like they had two movies kind of fighting each other, maybe even three movies fighting each other. And I just think altogether it didn't really work out. I was really stoked for it. The trailers looked awesome. And also the action kind of wasn't that great, which is nuts. Because Keanu Reeves is fucking John Wick. And the hand-to-hand combat in those movies are fucking insane. Why would they not bring that into The Matrix? Which the second and third one are primarily based on their action movies, their sci-fi action movies. Whereas the first one had the blend of the sci-fi and the complex ideas of the movie along with the action. The second and third are like, especially Reloaded, is a straight-up fucking action movie. And I was kind of bummed that the action sucked. It was just Neo using the Force, which was cool in points, but it was the whole thing. And that was kind of a bummer. So let's get in my top 10 of 2021. Number 10, King Richard. Will Smith, Andrew Ellis, and John Bernthal. John Bernthal is a very supporting role, but that dude was in everything this year. Everything. Many Saints in Newark. I just saw him in The Unforgivable, which was technically last year, too. He was in another movie I can't remember off the top of my head, but this dude was everywhere, and I loved it. I honestly hope he gets a Best Supporting Actor nomination for this role. I don't think he will, but he was so great in this movie and so different than he usually is, and I loved it. And Will Smith, man, this dude, I think, is winning the Oscar for this. He's obviously getting nominated. I just think it's his time. I don't think he's ever won one. And I think this is the time he's going to get the win for this, even though there's someone later in the list that is definitely deserving of the award as well. But I really think he's going to take this. Movie's awesome. If you don't know, it's the story of Serena and Venus Williams' father and how he kind of led them to their path of becoming two of the biggest sports stars ever. And the things he does, the mountains he moves for his two daughters, is absolutely unreal. It's unbelievable. I know some people are kind of upset because it's a movie about him and not a movie about the daughters. The second half kind of switches the focus a little bit. I can see why people are upset with that, but also the family was heavily involved in the making of this movie. So if they were okay with how the story was going, I think we should probably be okay with the story, but that's my number 10. Number 9, Free Guy. This is my biggest surprise of the year, I think. It looked like, you know, the trailers looked fun. I love Ryan Reynolds. I thought it was just going to be another Ryan Reynolds movie. It would just be a fun ride. And this movie blew me away. There's so much heart in it. It's directed by Sean Levy. He did like Real Steel, Day Night, Cheaper by the Dozen, and a million other movies. He did the Night at the Museum movies. And this movie was so heartfelt and human. And they're making a sequel because it did so well. And Disney kind of walked into this because they got it with the Fox merger, and they just got this movie, and they probably thought that it wouldn't do anything, but man, it crushed. And I can't wait to see where this world goes. It was such an awesome movie, and I can't wait to see more of it. It was funny. If you haven't seen this movie, I know it's coming to Hulu at some point soon. So if you haven't seen it yet, definitely watch it. It was my biggest surprise of the year that I did not think was going to be amazing. Number 8, Don't Look Up. Now, everyone and their mom is kind of in this, along with a couple of these movies in this list. Huge, huge casts in 2021 as well. Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, Jonah Hill, Meryl Streep. This movie was stacked. And Adam McKay has done Vice, The Big Short. He's also done Step Brothers and Talladega Nights. And he went into comedy and then kind of went into this like political satire kind of realm that he started with The Big Short and then went into with Vice. And I know this movie is very divisive among people. People either loved it or hated it. But I know there's a bunch of my friends that were like, it was fine. I really loved it. I love the commentary it had on kind of our current situation that's going on. I found it really funny because like, man, this is like what's happening right now. It's kind of fucked up. And it also obviously is a big indication of climate control and things like that. But you can definitely see the parallels between COVID and what happens in the movie. It's on Netflix, so if you haven't seen it, another one easy to pick up. Number 7. Now this one's kind of cheating because it technically came out in 2020, but its American release was 2021. But this is Demon Slayer Mugen Train, which is pretty much Demon Slayer season 1.5, which I know in season 2, the first arc, they just redid the movie, which kind of sucks because for everyone who's seen the movie, they're like, why do we want to watch this again? Just cut up. But I mean, most movies in anime aren't really canon to the story. They're kind of just side stories that don't matter. So it was cool to see a movie that was fully ingrained in the actual story. It picks up right where season 2 left off. And then obviously season 2 kind of just redoes the movie. So obviously it's very integral to the story moving forward. And I did think it was going to end in a kind of way that most anime movies kind of end, where it's just like, you know, it's the big setup and the big battle and then it ends and that's it. But then there was something extra to the big battle that added this whole layer of like heartbreak and heroism that I really, really loved. I know this is available on Funimation if you are into anime. I'm sure you have Funimation. So if somehow you haven't seen this, I mean, you can watch the season 2. It's kind of the same thing, just broken up. But I really, really love this movie. The ending completely surprised me. I did not see, I kind of thought it kind of was over and then it took it to another level. That's why I made my top 10. It was in my top 10 since it came out. So, and it came out in like March or April. So it's pretty long time to be in there. Number 6, Tick, Tick, Boom, starring Andrew Garfield. Man, I love this movie. So good. It's Lin-Manuel Miranda's directorial debut, which is also insanely impressive. I'm not a fan of Hamilton myself. Just not my thing. I haven't seen Encanto yet, which I've heard is very, very good. So I'll probably check that out sometime this week. But man, this movie was incredible. And I cannot recommend it enough. Another Netflix movie. Netflix honestly killed it. I know it can be very hit or miss with Netflix movies. It can be really bad or really good. Or some are just fine. Which, you know, like HBO Max and Disney Plus kind of have more quality to an extent. I know Disney Plus has put out some trash too. But I know Netflix is very hit or miss. But, I mean, I already have a bunch from Netflix on this list or that I've talked about already. But yes, Andrew Garfield, kind of my MVP of 2021, with another movie that I'm going to bring up later on. And man, I can't wait to see more of this dude in whatever he does. I'm in for any of it. This dude is incredible, and I love watching his interviews because he seems like such a nice, awesome dude. Obviously I don't know him, but man, I love that guy. I love Andrew Garfield. So number 6, Tick, Tick, Boom. Number 5, Coda. I know a lot of people haven't seen this movie. It's on Apple TV Plus, and that's probably why, but I know a lot of people got it because of Ted Lasso or anything else, mostly Ted Lasso. But watch this movie. It's about this girl. She has a family that's all deaf besides her, and she kind of needs to be the ears for her family. They run a fishing business, but she loves singing, and she kind of finds out that she can have a future in singing, and she kind of has to choose, do I take my own path or do I follow the path that's going to help my family? And it's a really amazing, just down to earth human movie. And I watched it like a month ago and it's been out for a while. So I highly recommend go watch Coda. If you have Apple TV Plus, there's like, if you have an Apple device, most people have it for free for like a year anyway. So I'm sure there's where you can find it. If not, it's $5 a month. It's super cheap. I think I paid 1 month for it because I keep finding things that gives me extensions on it somehow. I don't know. Go check it out. Apple TV Plus, Coda. Number 4, The Suicide Squad. James Gunn, man. Now, I didn't hate Suicide Squad, the first one, like a lot of people did. But after watching this movie, I was like, okay, that movie was kind of trash. I can kind of see why. It was just kind of like the ending of Suicide Squad was obviously not great. It's just kind of all the things that left of it. I was like, this is fine. I didn't think it was great. I just didn't hate it like most people did, which happens to be most things with me sometimes. But this movie was amazing. It felt almost Tarantino in a way, with the way they played with time, how they would go back like 10 minutes and show something from a different perspective. And I loved this movie. It was so much fun. I would die for King Shark. Obviously, we're getting more Peacemaker, which is kind of just, it's kind of a sequel to The Suicide Squad in a way. And I love this movie. I think it's back on HBO Max, especially with Peacemaker being on. They probably want people so they can just watch it straight through if they didn't catch it when it was on there. This movie's amazing. I know it didn't do well in the box office, but obviously the studio is very happy with James Gunn. They're bringing him back for another series. I hope we see another Suicide Squad, like a third one with James Gunn. I would love that. I would really love James Gunn to do a Thunderbolts series or movie for Marvel, but
I don't really know what his
relationship with Marvel is going to be. I know they brought him back for Guardians 3 and the holiday special, obviously, but I don't know what his future with the MCU is going to be. I don't know if he's just going to go with DC or if he's going to play in both worlds. I would love if he played in both, but I don't blame him if he kind of just goes with DC. He's got free reign over there. He's James Gunn Unleashed is this movie and Peacemaker, and I'm really loving watching it unfold. It's great. It's amazing. Number three, Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings. Man, I had high hopes for this movie. This movie kicked them out of the fucking orbit. This movie is so good. Oh my God. Simu Liu, man, this dude's a fucking star, and I'm glad he's getting his time in the sun after this movie. I know Kim's Convenience has been a thing. I've never watched it, but I kind of want to watch it because I know one of the other main guys is the Ranger from Mando. So that makes me want to watch it, especially with Simu Liu being a main character. But this movie is fucking great. I know it's kind of formulaic MCU movie, you know, but I thought the villain was done really well with his dad, Tony Leung, playing the Mandarin or Wen Wu. And man, this movie is so great. All the action set pieces were mind blowing. And I know people weren't a fan. Some people weren't a fan of the third act. I thought it was really cool and a little bit different. I know it was like a CGI kind of fight, but I felt like the dragons were a different vibe than we've ever gotten. And I can't wait to see where the Ten Rings and Shang-Chi go and the group, the Ten Rings. I'm very excited to see where that goes. I know there's a rumored series coming with that. We'll see about that. But I know they're already working on a sequel, which is no shock to me. It's kind of hard to get stuff not get continued in the MCU, but I know this is a big hit critically. And it did pretty well in the box office, all things considered, of what last year. There was one movie that did incredibly well in the box office, you know, for normal times, but for COVID times, it did really well. So I'm happy to see more of that. Number two, Dune. Denis Villeneuve. Man. Another one. Had high hopes. I read like the beginning of the book, like a third or a quarter of the book, and that helped me get the groundwork to know the characters and kind of know the terminology of the world and get a vibe for all of that stuff. But my wife's never read Dune, Sam, and she loved the movie too. And this movie looks beautiful. I loved everything about it. It's like one of my favorite worlds I've ever been introduced into. I've said this a couple times on the podcast, but if I had to choose between the MCU continuing and Dune, I would pick Dune right now. I know we're getting part two. It's supposedly coming in 2023, and I can't wait for it. I love this movie. I thought it was incredible. Everything from the sound design, again, the cinematography, the acting, this cast is unbelievable. Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, Josh Brolin, Oscar Isaac, Jessica Ferguson. It's just fucking insanity, the people they got for this movie. Batista, you know, it's crazy. And I can't wait to see more of it. I hope at least goes for a trilogy. I know they're doing a series two on the Bene Gesserit, which I don't think I think it's probably going to be like a prequel kind of to it, but can't wait for more Dune. Got to finish the book too, but but I love Dune. And number one, probably no shock to anyone, Spider-Man No Way Home. John Watts completing his trilogy. Tom Holland doing the fucking thing, man. Easily his best performance I've ever seen, he's my favorite Spider-Man live action, 100%. This became my favorite Spider-Man movie, my favorite MCU movie, that's not me saying it lightly whatsoever. This movie is unbelievable. It's so fucking good. Spoiler alert, if you are one of the people who haven't seen Spider-Man No Way Home, we got all three Spider-Man, live action Spider-Man. We got villains from all the movies. It was fucking perfect. It was done so great. And at the heart of this, it was a Tom Holland, Peter Parker movie. They nailed it. They knocked it out of the park. I wouldn't have changed a single thing. Number one, Spider-Man and No Way Home. Now it's time for the Metalcore Nerds edition of Destroy the Seven, covering Black Manta. Ah! Ah!
deep, and a cave spreads over the tottering cities of men.
Black Manta, aka David Hyde, is a supervillain most known for being Aquaman's arch nemesis. He was created by Bob Haney and Nick Carty and made his debut in Aquaman number 35 in September 1967. It wasn't until 10 years later where his helmet finally came off and his identity was revealed. 10 years. And then it took 16 years after that in 1993 where Black Manta finally got his first origin story. So it's comic books that can be kind of confusing at times, more so a lot of the times. And he has three different origins in ways. They've changed it a few times. So the first one, like I said, 1993. Black Manta grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. He used to hang out in the Chesapeake Bay. During his youth, he got abducted by pirates and were made to work on the ship and were abused by said pirates. One day, he saw Aquaman swimming around with his dolphin friends. He signaled for help. Aquaman didn't see him. So from that point on, he vowed to take over the sea and Aquaman himself, seeing him as the leader of the sea. So, you know, kind of like a mustache twirling villain in a way. I guess he had some sort of a reason, but that's origin number one. Origin number two. In the 2003 Aquaman series, Black Manta grew up in Gotham City and had autism. He was placed in Arkham Asylum to help treat it. The scientists didn't know how to treat it, but they did eventually end up curing him, but caused him to have very violent behaviors. He ends up killing the scientists and escapes and becomes Black Manta, a criminal and pirate. Origin number two. Origin number three. This is most like the one we've seen in the movie Aquaman. And it happened after Flashpoint. Geoff Johns and Ivan Reis in the New 52. He has a much better reason to hate Aquaman in this one. So he is tasked to go get a sample of Aquaman's blood to prove he's not Atlantean. While doing that, Aquaman's dad defends him, has a heart attack, and dies. Aquaman, being pissed that Black Manta is the cause of his dad's death, goes after him and ends up killing his dad. So now they have this blood feud after killing each other's fathers. And that's kind of what happened in the movie. We'll get to the movie later on. Now on to powers and abilities. Black Manta has a keen scientific mind and is an expert in mechanical engineering and military tactics. He is a skilled swordsman in hand-to-hand combat, but relies more on technology and strategy than physical confrontations. He is most known for his iconic black tactical underwater armor and that amazing fucking helmet that they adapted live action perfectly. This suit allows him to survive in extreme temperatures, depths, and is sealed at an atomic level. It has artificial gills that let him breathe underwater as long as he wants. He uses many weapons, including swords, knives, spears, tridents, and harpoon guns, and of course, the plasma beams that shoot out of the eyes of his helmet. He also has the Manta Sub, which is pretty much a super spy submarine. His affiliations are the Injustice League, Legion of Doom, Suicide Squad, Sinestro Corps, Anti-Atlantean Group Nemo, and the Secret Society of Superman. Now, shout out to Lance from Comic Book Keepers for hooking me up with some information on the pull list of Black Manta, aka some the most prominent runs he's been involved in. First off, Murder Most Foul. Adventure Comics number 452 came out in 1977. So this is wild. So basically, Black Manta captures Arthur Curry, Aquaman's son, Arthur Jr., aka Aqua Baby. Hilarious name. Sounds like the 70s in comics. And force Aquaman to fight Aqualad to the death to free his kid. Aquaman couldn't do it, so Black Manta killed the baby. Killed it. Killed the baby. This creates Aquaman and Mera's relationship to sever, and Black Manta literally becomes a dude who killed his baby and broke up Aquaman's marriage. Wild. This is also the issue where he takes his helmet out and reveals that he is David Hyde for the first time. Very, very cool. Next up, Aquaman number 20 through 30 in 1997. This is one of the runs where Black Manta is a Manta-Man hybrid, which is wild and very comic-y. You know, why the fuck not? It's always fun when superheroes or villains combine with the animal they're named after. It's weird, but it's cool. Comics, you know?
Green Arrow number 3 through 4 is the Quiver run that was written by Kevin Smith, which has been very, very highly recommended. I mean, I love Kevin Smith, so. And then you get Black Manta versus Green Arrow and Aquaman and Star City. Very cool. I need to read this one 100%. I love Kevin Smith. Aquaman number 7 through 13 from 2002. This is the new 52 one where we get that new origin from him that's most like what we've known from the movies. Next up is Aquaman Rebirth. The run is called The Drowning. This one, David Hyde has found himself still obsessed with destroying Aquaman, and Aquaman opens up an Atlantean embassy, and Black Manta poses a reporter to infiltrate it and blows up the embassy, killing a bunch of Atlanteans and humans. Basically, this group called Nemo recruits Black Manta, and then he ends up killing their leader and taking over. And then in Black Manta Rising, which follows up this, it sees him as taking over Nemo and going to war with Atlantis. Very cool stuff. And then last but not least, there's the Justice miniseries from 2005, Alex Ross, and he's one of the main antagonists featured in The Legion of Doom, which Destroy the Seven is based off The Legion of Doom. Some adaptations for Black Manta. He's had a number of brief appearances in animated form, including Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox, Justice League, The Throne of Atlantis, and is a member of the Suicide Squad in Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay, and Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. Now, these are mostly very brief appearances, especially in the Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. He's a member of the Suicide Squad, like I said, and he doesn't even have a speaking role. He's just kind of there. But that movie is fucking awesome. A lot of the DC anime movies are very, very good, but I highly suggest the Justice League Dark and then Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. They kind of follow into each other. You can kind of watch Apocalypse War without it, but there is the main character of Constantine is heavily, you know, he's the main character in both of them, so it continues right along with that. But Apocalypse War is a wild, wild movie. It's super brutal for a cartoon. Think like Invincible and stuff like that. It's along those lines, 100%. DC does animate very, very well, so if you haven't checked that out, it's on HBO Max, so go watch them. They're amazing. He's in a few video games, the DC Lego games, he's in a few, and he's in Injustice 2. And of course, we know him most, the way I knew him most, I wanted to do this deep dive to learn more about Black Manta, which has been an awesome, awesome ride. I hope you guys are enjoying it as well as much as I am. But we know him most from the 2018 movie Aquaman, where he is played by Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, which I mentioned earlier in the episode. He played Candyman. He was also Dr. Manhattan in the Watchmen series. He's an amazing actor. He's unbelievable. And his name in this is David Kane. So it's not David Hyde. It's David Kane. And I thought he was awesome in this movie. I know a lot of people say he is underutilized in the movie, which I agree, but I know he's going to be in the sequel, so I'm okay with that. And he got the nickname Manta because his grandfather served as a frogman in the U.S. Navy in World War II, which they also called Mantas. But that's all I got for Black Manta in this one, and that's all for this episode. Thank you guys so much for checking this out. We'll be back next week with a super episode of the Book of Boba Fett, episodes 4 and 5. And until next time, see you later, nerds.